The coronavirus is not the first major outbreak or pandemic the world has ever seen. They've happened before, and they've changed history. Frank Snowden is professor emeritus of history and history of medicine at Yale University and has written a book called Epidemics and Society from the Black Death to the Present. He joins us now. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, let's start where you do with the Black Death, the bubonic plague, which became the standard against which later epidemics and pandemics would be measured. It's the worst ever. It was in the 14th century. It killed a third of the world's population. Where did it come from and how did it get so bad?
Oh, it came from reservoirs of animals in the Orient, particularly in China, and came by trade routes carried by fleas and rats who moved their way across the Mediterranean, and it had a devastating impact on every aspect of society, the arts, religion, the economy. It promoted the power of the modern state because communities had to organize to prevent this disease, and that took an enormous centralizing authority, which even needed an army administrative personnel. It needed civil authorities, boards of health. This took enormous resources, and therefore it's not by chance that the plague centuries are marked by the emerging power of the modern state, and the plague, in fact, is one of the factors that helps that process along.
Well, and it also gave us what we now know of as quarantine, right, in Venice.
That's right. Absolutely. Venice devised a protective device to ward off arrival from the east by using quarantine. That is, they decided to put all ships that were landing, to put them into a fortress-like place where the crews and their cargoes and passengers were kept for 40 days on the idea that after that they would be safe. They didn't understand what the incubation for plague would be. They guessed 40 days for religious purposes, and that turned out to be more than the incubation period. And so, in fact, it did protect Venice, and Venice ceased to be ravaged by the end of the 17th century. So these were measures that had effective means of protection against the bubonic plague and were indebted for the ideas of contagion and quarantine, isolation, and social distancing that we see playing out in front of our eyes today.
I have to say, before we go on, because we're going to get to some of the other pandemics in world history, but the idea of this coming from China to Italy and then ships being kept at sea and people being kept in quarantine for a certain period of time, it does sound awfully familiar to what we're seeing right now.
It absolutely does. It's eerie, the familiarity. And indeed, there are lots of people who are debating whether the right thing to do with coronavirus is to go back to this Venetian experiment, quarantining whole communities, not just individuals. And that's a debate that's dividing the European community. And I suspect we'll see that in the United States as well.
In the early 20th century, there was a flu pandemic that forced bans on public gatherings, school cancellations. That was the Spanish flu, which ended up killing about 50 million people across the world. What happened there?
Well, in terms of the Spanish flu, of course, it's a misnomer. It wasn't really, had nothing to do with Spain. It's just that Spain was neutral in World War I, and so its press was not censored. So it was, Spain was the place where the news got out of exactly how bad it was. There's a big debate now about how it began. Clearly, it was carried by birds, so this has a familiarity as well for our own times, and there was an overspill from the birds to human beings. But interestingly, though its mortality was huge, its impact was not the same as the Black Death, and indeed, it's often known as the forgotten pandemic. In fact, we just had the American president talk about, it's like influenza coronavirus, and influenza is nothing, he said, that kind of thing. So this is, I think, gives us an idea of how it's not simply the body count that tells us how important a disease really is. And there are other diseases like cholera that had a limited body count, but a huge impact on civilization. It's always very different because of these other factors.
Now, some people who have been looking at what we're dealing with now, the novel coronavirus, compare it to the swine flu of 2009, which did kill more than 500,000 people around the world. Is that a good comparison, do you think, at this point?
It would be a very brave person to make a prediction of what the end result of the coronavirus is going to be. It certainly has the potential to be a major international global disaster because it's transmitted relatively easily and it travels fast, but we don't know, and it's still to be played out, how effectively public health officials and countries will be in developing measures to contain and mitigate the disaster. So I don't want to take the pessimistic line of sounding the alarm and say, yes, this is going to be swine flu, or it's going to maybe even be worse. I just want to say we don't know yet, but it clearly has the possibility of something really dreadful. And one can easily, all too easily, imagine this being worse than swine flu.
We also have to talk about HIV/AIDS. Millions still live with it, but it has killed more than 30 million people worldwide since it was first documented in the early 1980s. And like the coronavirus, there is a period of time when people can transmit it, but might not know that they have it. That makes it a lot harder to control, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. This is one of the huge factors that's really important. That is to say, modern public health depends on monitoring the population, knowing who's being affected, and then being able to move to isolate those people, identify their contacts, quarantine them. And those measures become very, very difficult if you don't have an easy and rapid diagnostic test. And coronavirus, happily, no one is sick for as long as people are contagious with HIV/AIDS. But nonetheless, that factor is really a major one that's propelling this disease forward. And we can see the U.S. government wasn't able to provide the various states in America with adequate numbers of diagnostic testing kits. And that's one of the reasons, this lack of preparedness, that is propelling the disease. In other words, it's been transmitting silently now for some weeks, and no one knew that it was actually already there. So this is a very dangerous part of the coronavirus.
Professor Snowden, countries around the world are responding to this disease in different ways. But let's just talk about the U.S. for a minute. With all of your background and your knowledge of these various pandemics that have happened over the course of human history, what would your one piece of advice be to the United States in how it handles this now?
I would say that the number one thing is the feature Bruce Aylward brought back from his experience of looking at coronavirus in China. He said what we need to do, first of all, is to change our mindset. In other words, we have to recognize that this is something we're all in. Otherwise, there'll be no possibility of containing it. So I think the first thing that makes all of the other measures possible is accepting reality. This is something that is real and important, and we can do something about it if we accept the science of it and mobilize and share our resources and not think that we can block it by false measures like bans and national barriers and all the rest of it, because coronavirus does not respect national borders or wealth or any of those things that we like to tell ourselves are bulwarks of protection.
That is Frank Snowden, whose book is called Epidemics in Society from the Black Death to the Present. He is a professor emeritus at Yale. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.